When I was young, I learned Santa Claus puns. Katie, why does Santa Claus have three gardens?
So he can ho, ho, ho.
Why was Santa's little helper depressed?
Because he had low elf esteem.
What do you call people who are afraid of Santa Claus?
Claustrophobic.
And last, what do you call Santa's helpers?
Subordinate clauses.
When you get to do the evaluation of a student minister, you can get them to do just about anything. Even bad puns. Eventually, I did grow up. I discovered that for some people, Santa Claus is a serious symbol. 13 years ago, I was living in Kensington, Maryland, a small suburb of about 2,000 people near Washington, D.C., I was serving a Unitarian Universalist church in Bethesda, Maryland. One day in the fall of 2001, a member of the town council called me to ask, "Who is Santa? Is Santa religious?" Well, I said, it all depends on how you define the word religious. I ran through my short speech about the etymology of the word religion. I said something like this. The word religion first appeared in France about 700 years ago. We don't know exactly what it originally referred to, but it appears to have a Latin etymology referring to connect together or tie together or bind together. And I then take that etymology, connecting, tying, binding together, and say that religion for me is the effort to connect and tie and bind together all the different elements of our lives, our work, our marriage, our children, the things we do for recreation, the charitable things we do, all the things we do in our lives, our education, into one meaningful whole. To tie all that together. So religion is the act of trying to get sense and purpose out of all those activities. How do they all connect? How do they make sense as the purpose of our lives? Now, what was the question about Santa? Well, she said, there are a couple of Jewish families in the community who came to us a year ago and asked if we could have a menorah along with the Christmas tree that we light at the town council headquarters at the city hall every Christmas. And we said, well, you haven't given us enough time to consider this, so we can't. We've got the whole ceremony set. About 50 people come. We light the Christmas tree. Actually, we use the city fire engine, and Santa Claus arrives on the fire engine and comes down and flips the switch. And we don't have time to do it this year to change that. So last August, they came to the council again and said, last year you said there wasn't enough time. Now we'd like you to consider again adding a menorah to be more inclusive to the ceremony. So the council discussed this, and we again said, look, we're lighting a Christmas tree, which is not a religious symbol, in our opinion. It is more a celebration of the holidays that includes everyone, whatever their religious background. And if we add a menorah, that turns the event into a religious service, and we would have to then the Catholics would come to us and say, well, we would like to add a creche also next to the menorah and the Christmas tree. And then the agnostics would complain and the atheists, and we might have a lawsuit, and it would just all get out of hand. So what we have is a secular celebration where Santa Claus lights the tree, and that's it. So one of the Jewish families said to the council, isn't Santa Claus religious? And that's why I'm calling you, Roger. Is Santa Claus religious? Well, I was actually, at that point, not an expert on Santa Claus. I said, I have a vague memory that Santa Claus is based on a saint from Turkey, Saint Nicholas, a Catholic saint. And so you could say that Santa Claus is quasi-religious, but I'm really not an expert. She thanked me and said she would call other clergy to get their input also. The council eventually decided the way to deal with this is not to have Santa Claus light the Christmas tree because of the issue around whether Santa Claus represented the Christian religion. So they voted to, and this was 2001, to have a policeman, a police officer, let's do this non-sexist, a firefighter, and a letter carrier to all three of them. I guess they probably had three switches or a very big switch or something, to together light the Christmas tree for the 50 people who showed up to this small ceremony that I didn't even know about, even though I lived in the community for years. And not have Santa arrive on a fire engine and not have Santa light the tree. Someone picked up on this, and headlines appeared around the world, literally in Australia, India, New Zealand, everywhere. In America, there is a town that has banned Santa. Woo! Banned Santa. So the controversy got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the council, 2 days before the lighting of the tree, reversed this decision and said, oh, okay, we get it. We'll have Santa there too. But by then, no one cared. They were so outraged. Now, kind of like wanting to go to a fire, I walked over to, for the first time in living in the community, I walked over to the city hall that Sunday evening to see what was going to happen. Well, there were about 1,000 people there. Most of them did not live in our little community. And many of them were dressed in Santa outfits. But this was not a fun, happy event. It was intense. There were satellite TV trucks lining the road. And then I saw something that really upset me and upset many people. A man had arrived with a sign that said, and a fairly large sign at that, if Jews can ban Santa, why can't we ban Jews? Well, someone attacked him and tore the sign down. There was a fight. The police had to intervene and separate them. Eventually, and all of this yelling and screaming about, you know, support Santa and all these people in costumes, they got the tree lit and people went home. Not an event you would want to invite children to. But all of this spurned my curiosity about who Santa really is. I wondered. So I pulled out my History of Christmas books, and I started reading. I discovered that the word Santa Claus is actually an American invention. It first appeared in print in a New York newspaper 204 years ago in 1810. However, these creators of the American Santa Claus based him in part on stories about a Roman Catholic saint named Nicholas. Therefore, he is, to a certain extent, a religious figure. The legend says that Nicholas was a bishop on the coast of what is now Turkey, lived in the early 4th century, and according to the legend, he died on December 6th. We have no written records of that period, no records that we can go back and say this is the original information 1,700 years ago. What we do have is an oral history that must have existed, because hundreds of years after his death, people wrote down stories about Nicholas. In one, Nicholas learns of a father who, finding himself unable to provide dowries for his three daughters, reluctantly decides to sell the young women into prostitution. Bishop Nicholas throws three bags of gold into the father's window, saving the daughters from lives as prostitutes. According to another legend, Bishop Nicholas stops at the inn in which an innkeeper had murdered three boys and left their dismembered remains in salt tubs for curing meat. According to the legend, the innkeeper prepared to serve some of the meat from the boys to Nicholas for breakfast. Nicholas confronted the innkeeper and miraculously restored the boys to life. The murderer confessed and repented. Nicholas is merciful and promises the innkeeper's barren wife that she will give birth to a son. From this gruesome legend, St. Nicholas became a patron saint of children. Now, about 900 years ago, a group of French nuns started to honor St. Nicholas Day. On the eve of the anniversary of St. Nicholas's death, December 6th, on the evening of December 5th, they secretly left presents at the houses of poor children. The nuns were copying the story of how Nicholas gave bags of gold to the poor young women who were in danger of being sold into prostitution. This practice spread throughout Western and Central Europe, though it never took hold in the Catholic lands that were south of there, such as Italy. Over the centuries, the story of St. Nicholas bringing gifts on December 6th evolved. St. Nicholas came through a window, in some stories, or he came down a chimney. In some stories, he left gifts in stockings. In others, he left gifts in shoes. Some stories had him put the gifts by a fireplace, others by a window, and others by a bed. In some stories, he walked to people's homes. In others, he flew. And in still others, he rode a donkey. According to the legend, St. Nicholas had a stern side as well as a generous side. Some families in Europe kept a St. Nicholas stick on which to keep track of the number of Our Fathers said by the child, both to impress the saint when he arrived and to remind the child of the conditional nature of the gifts. In the 16th century, Martin Luther and other Protestant reformers pointed out that this worship of saints in the Catholic Church was a corrupt practice. Part of the Protestant Reformation was an attempt to stamp out the worship of saints like Nicholas. Protestant leaders said, "Instead of worshiping Nicholas, we should worship Jesus." Therefore, they tried to move the practice of giving gifts to children from the eve of December 6th to the eve of December 25th. Well, this attempt to change the symbolism was not completely successful. Children in the Netherlands in particular resisted. When Amsterdam legislated against the making of St. Nicholas cookies, a rebellious group of children protested. With the help of their parents, the children saw to it that the authorities never enforced the law. From the Netherlands, people carried the legend of St. Nicholas to a small island in the New World called New Amsterdam, later renamed by the British as New York. The earliest evidence of this is a colonial-era cookie press. They shaped the press to make cookies that looked like a bishop resurrecting three pickled boys, helping the boys out of the pickle barrel. You could eat the cookie. In the Dutch language, the name for St. Nicholas was Sinterklaas. On St. Nicholas Day, December 6, 1809, a New York writer named Washington Irving published a satirical history of his city entitled A History of New York from the Beginning of the World to the End of the Dutch Dynasty. Washington Irving did not use the name Santa Claus in this book published on Santa Claus Day, December 6th, but without Irving, we would not have Santa Claus. In his fictional history, Irving invented a Saint Nicholas who flew over New York City in a wagon and climbed down chimneys to deliver presents on December 6th. Many Americans read Washington Irving's book. It resulted on December 15, 1810, a poem published in a newspaper using the name Santa Claus. And this was the first appearance in print of the American translation of the Dutch name Sinterklaas. This invented character received an enormous boost with the publication in 1823 of the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas. It is the best known poem in the English language, and we will now all say the first line together. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The poem, for the first time, places St. Nicholas in a sleigh with a reindeer. For the first time, St. Nicholas comes on Christmas Eve, not on December 6th. So the Protestant Reformation finally took hold. For the first time, St. Nicholas is no longer a religious figure. Instead of a bishop's robe, he is dressed in fur. No longer is St. Nicholas threatening punishment. There is nothing to dread. The reference to a stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth is a clear message to the people living in New York in 1823 that St. Nicholas is part of the working class. The upper classes favored a long, eloquently curved pipe. Working class folks had short pipes. In Germany, there was a character called Besnickel, who accompanied St. Nicholas on his gift-giving rounds. He was a shaggy, suit-covered man who carried a whip, a bell, and a sack of treats. Germans brought this character to Pennsylvania. The author of the poem appears to have based his visual description of Santa Claus on this German character, Besnickel, dressed in fur and covered in suit, but without a whip. I'm very carefully only talking about the author without identifying the author because there is a huge fight over who wrote the poem. The American invention of Santa Claus was an attempt to transform Christmas from a holiday of drinking binges to a sober, domestic holiday, a celebration of home and children. If you could imagine transforming the worst events of New Year's Eve to Christmas Eve, that's the way they used to celebrate Christmas. But this was an attempt to turn it away from getting drunk and roaming the streets and setting off loud noises to making it into a domestic holiday of home and hearth. The American Civil War did much to accelerate the reception of Christmas in the United States as a holiday representing homecoming, family, and reconciliation. Santa Claus represented the spirit of giving and non-judgmental good feeling among all people. The red suit first appeared in a color reprint of a drawing by Thomas Nash, which you see on the cover of the Order of Service. So it wasn't Coca-Cola, but Thomas Nash who invented the red suit of Santa Claus shortly after the Civil War. Some, however, objected to this worship of an overweight white male. In 1917, one newspaper reported that Santa had enlisted with the American forces in the First World War, and Mrs. Santa had to take over. She reacted carefully to the news that she was now in charge of the reindeer and the sleigh. She was glad that this once she could drive them alone, which she could never do when Santa was home. For Santa was old, and he had his ways that were set, and he never believed in the suffragette. But now, Mrs. Santa would surely have her chance to make good with the home folks while he was in France. Today, parents debate whether or not to tell their children that Santa Claus is imaginary. Some research suggests that young children can distinguish between good lies and bad lies. When we say Santa is real, that is a good lie. When we say, sorry kids, I can't go to the playground today because it's closed, when really we're just too lazy to get up off the couch, that's a bad lie. Like having an imaginary friend. At a young age, some children are aware at some level that Santa is pretend, but they still enjoy pretending. On average, around the age of 6 or 7, most children realize that Santa Claus is a make-believe person. Someone asked 9 and 10-year-old children who knew that Santa is pretend if they believe that we should teach younger children the Santa story. 70% of the children said yes. The children said their disappointment at discovering the truth of the Santa story often turned into a desire to become part of the conspiracy and to continue the tradition. Stories help a children to develop the ability to analyze events. Those who study children say that rather than opposing logic, stories, imaginary stories, stimulate their imagination, and they're the first steps in logical thinking. Researchers see the Santa Claus story as a way to teach children important social lessons. For example, one part of the story is the practice of leaving out a snack for Santa Claus and his reindeer. This conveys the importance of generosity, tradition, and hospitality. Child experts say that the Santa story gives children a sense of mystery and wonder. It gives them an altered view of the passage of time. It gives them an exercise in imagination and a chance to practice kindness. So a few years ago, on a cold, dark night in the Washington suburb of Kensington, Maryland, just 10 miles north of the White House, I watched 1,000 angry Santa Claus supporters gather for a tree lighting. I felt sad and frightened by their righteous indignation over perceived mistreatment, a perceived insult. After the event, I walked home through the dark streets of the little suburb. I walked past the closed shops and the commuter train station, through the park, past the houses with their Christmas lights, and back to my own home. As I walked, I thought to myself, Santa Claus is one incarnation of our parents' love, one incarnation during this season of the love of our parents. The value of inexpensive gifts is that they symbolize the love between the parent and the child. Perhaps I thought, this is from where the anger came. When these confused people heard that a town had banned Santa, they felt like the town was banning a symbolic way that parents could express their love for their children. Many years have passed since that Christmas. My hope for you on this holiday season is the same as it is every year. I hope you will feel love. I hope you can recall and feel love from your childhood, love from parents, from brothers and sisters, love from friends. I hope you will feel love today from your friends in this congregation. Together, let us read the poems. Let us enjoy the stories. Let us sing the carols. And let us feel again the joy of this December tradition.